everybody. This is Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. What does Bulova Omega Cartier Swatch Timex and Longines have in common? What do they have in common? Say goodbye to Bulova Omega Cartier Swatch Timex and Longines. I was in the studio today and I said, everybody, show me your elbows. And nobody was wearing a watch. Nobody wears a watch anymore. A watch was so important. Do you remember graduating and being given a watch? I wore a watch for so many years. And remember the fancy watches, the pretty watches, the different watches. And then all of a sudden, you know, you don't need a watch. You can look on your cell phone. But since the time is present to you everywhere you go, on every computer, on the wall, in the clocks, time is so significant. Nobody carries a watch. Now, down in the islands, very few people wear watches because they don't care as much about time. Time has got a certain expanse. If I'll be there shortly, could mean an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, but it's not as distinct. Why do we bring this up? Because we used to wear watches as a piece of jewelry, and it used to be noticed by people. And they would look at your watch, and what would they say? The better your watch was, the more significant you are. Yep. If you had that special Omega, or whatever, that special one, the one that was the diver's watch, or the, you know, whatever it was, gold or silver or whatever, the better your watch, the more significant you are. But now watches are gone, and you can't do very much with cell phones. I mean, you just get a certain level of cell phone. So I wonder what the next thing is going to be doing that's going to be guaranteeing you be seen as significant. Everybody's got their body in shape. Everybody shaped their body with one thing or another. They've sculpted it with plastic surgery. You've got stuff, Botox around the eyes. You got everybody's hair is dyed. Right? And everybody is doing, or most people are doing, things that they do to be significant. And because they do it just like everybody else, it's somewhat insignificant. I was in a restaurant in Connecticut. We're sitting by the water in a restaurant. And I noticed everybody in the restaurant was blonde. Every woman was blonde, had blonde hair. And I thought to myself, that's interesting. Blonde hair. Everyone walked in with blonde hair. One woman walked in with brown hair. And I swear all the heads turned around. Suddenly she became significant. Because she wasn't being significant. Now this brings us to the question of significance and how important significance is. Is it important to feel like you matter? Is it important to feel like you make a difference? Of course, we will preach at you all day long and tell you about how important you are and how you make a difference. But I don't know, there's some people who think if you all wear the same robes and you don't have any possessions of any significance, then you're no more significant than the next guy, and that's a road to enlightenment. That may be true. What if that were true? What if it's true? This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, by the way. Lisa Arnone, John Valerio with me. What if it's true that all of our effort to be significant is making us depressed? But if you take away your belief in your significance, you are depressed. It's one of the definitions that they have of depression. which is an awareness that you're not so special and you feel meaningless. So how do you get through it? I got a good friend. I had a good friend who's been a woman who's just a remarkable human being. And she's in her 80s now, but she was always the most fit person I ever saw. She lifted weights. She seemed to have defied gravity all her life. Everything about her was vibrant, alive. She had a stroke. All of that thing that she had disappeared. And she was now somebody without appearance, without bubbles. Of course, she's significant to me. But she doesn't have that automatic significance she had walking down the street. So now we take it a step further and we think about this. What happens to people as they get older? Especially they've talked about people past menopause, men and women, who go through menopause and then lose some of that young attractiveness that is supposed to bring a mate to your door, you know? And so now you don't have that. Now the head's not turning anymore when you walk down the street. In fact, the head doesn't even look at you. What's it like? What's it feel like? Does it get depressing? Well, you go out and you get your hair done and you get your plastic surgery and you wear the right clothing to become significant. That's what the therapist will tell you to do. Make yourself more significant. Compensate for all of that stuff. Get out there or do something else, which is settle into being a little less visible and seeing what the world is like from a less visible place. Back in 1988, 83 I think it was, 83, I had a challenge. I had been giving lectures for large amounts of money to large amounts of people. I had audiences. You can even see it if you look on the Wikipedia. They show some of my history there. That there were, you know, there were times that I would be in Princeton University or stuff like that giving lectures. And it was a lot of people were paying a lot of attention to me, but I didn't like it. I didn't like what was happening to me. I was becoming so grandiose. I was becoming so proud of myself. I was becoming so sure of myself that I began feeling not like myself anymore. I started acting like what people thought I was instead of being who I really was. And I took 8 months and I asked all the people around me, I said, look, do me a favor, keep this thing going, which meant keep the center going, keep the clinic going, and I'm going to take this 8 months and stop doing everything. No writing, no investing, no nothing. And I did. And I disappeared. I was on Fire Island, I remember, and I stayed on Fire Island for 8 months. And I stayed in Fire Island where I didn't talk to anybody, especially after season when nobody was there. And I spoke to no one, and I was alone. And what happened behind my overly significant self was I discovered my depression. It was sitting right there waiting for me. And I said, okay, here it is, but I'm a very equipped man. I know how to deal with that stuff because I know all about it, and I recognized it. And I didn't believe any of the words I was telling myself, and it turned out I got tremendous benefit from it. In fact, during that period of time, I read The Drama of the Gifted Child by Alice Miller and practically digested every word of the book, and I learned a tremendous amount about myself. Which means, in this significance of today's program, that you, in your desire to be significant, may have access to another part of you that makes you even more, I hate the word significant, in your own mind. Everything you do. Hey, did you ever hear the butterfly effect? Did you ever hear the butterfly effect? Good, Jana. Butterfly effect. It's a wonderful thing to know about. It's in chaos theory. In chaos theory, the butterfly effect is that if a butterfly flaps its wings, it could have, from the force of its flapping its wing, crossed over the wind that makes a tornado And it may have been that extra wing flap wind that helped the tornado break from being a strong wind into a tornado. So the butterfly effect is how something really tiny can have an effect in the future of something very grand. So you walk down the street and you see people who are insignificant. How do you know they're insignificant? Because they stopped looking. Because they have empty eyes. Because they feel that way. And you recognize them and you smile. And you've done something. You've had a butterfly. Somehow that ripples. Somehow that does something. That if you're doing. Now, not because it makes you important. I knew a man who at every Christmas time would get these little bocce chocolates. He was a very, very wealthy man. Oh, my God. He would tell me the stories, and it was very difficult. You know, as a therapist, sometimes people tell you stories, and you find their behavior very objectionable. But, you know, you're not supposed to say it. You're supposed to accept the person as they are. So he would come to me at Christmas time, and he would tell me how proud he was. That at Christmas time, he would get these bocce chocolates, which are these little individual chocolates with a nut on them that are wrapped in silver. You know which ones I'm talking about? And he'd walk around with a pocket full of those. And he'd go over to all the homeless people. And instead of giving them money or $5, he gave them a bocce chocolate. And they were so grateful that he had given them something so important, significant, and different. And he prided himself on this. But this man was an egotist. What's the difference between the two? No, what's the difference? What's the definition? What is an egotist?
So an egotist is someone who has an inflated sense of themselves and their importance. And that they act on that assumption. So they do everything that they need to do. They do things to make themselves feel good. And they believe that making themselves feel good is important to everybody else.
Do they care about other people?
No, not so much. They do not care about other people.
They don't care about other people?
No.
So then what they do is not important to other people?
No. I mean, I think there's an assumption that it is, but it's not really what motivates them. What motivates them is confirming their own sense of importance.
Is this like a person who is egocentric? Is there a relationship between the two?
I think there is, but egocentric is, I would say, more noticeable in that it's more off than what you would expect someone to do. This is more within the bounds of, so egocentric can be odd or quirky. This is more connected to what the person feels their strengths are and how they can best display those strengths.
I don't think there's a difference between the word egotism and egoism. You know, I think I've tried in the past to find those two, Lisa. But I think what you're saying is important. It's kind of the world revolves around me. You know, an egotist, I'm an agent of the world, and the world revolves around me, and everything that happens is about me. So if I go to a party that's somebody else's party, it's how do I show up? How do I have a reaction? How are they going to think of me when I give this gift? It's all kind of self-reflective. A mistake is often that people confuse this with narcissism. Narcissism is a totally different thing. The idea of narcissism being self-love is a mistake. I mean, it's not a mistake. You could use it any way you want. But narcissism means an attachment to a fake image of yourself, like the White Rock lady, you know, looking in the pool, or like you see an image of yourself. That's what narcissists did. Narcissus did. He or she?
He.
He looked into the pool and saw his reflection and fell in love with his reflection. So what a narcissist does is they make up an image of who they are, they say something about themselves, and they live accordingly, and they're attached to that image. What an egotist does, they may be narcissistic, they have the entire world, everything around relates to them and only to them. So this becomes very significant, because everything becomes significant as it attaches to their image and their feeling about themselves. It's a very difficult life to lead. You know, an egotistic life is a very difficult life. Now, you hear people who are egotists being proud. They're talking about I. They use the word I a tremendous amount. You know, you could really see it in their writing, except if they're texting. Something funny about texting, people leave out pronouns all the time. And it's like it may be the cure. So this is Armand Amour with Lisa Arnone. Lisa, you were going to say?
I was just going to say that I was thinking about the butterfly. And so a butterfly as an egotist would be a butterfly that thought that knew, I'm going to flap my wing and there's going to be a tornado.
So, yes, I'm going to do something now that may seem insignificant, but it's going to have an effect somewhere all the way down the road. Well, I don't know, then I must be an egotist, because I believe that my smile to the person walking down the street has an effect down the road. That is that kind of a belief. What if it didn't have an effect? What if it didn't have an effect? What if the person didn't even care whether I smiled or not? Wouldn't that be interesting? I'm going to try that one out. I'm going to try looking at it that way. I'm going to try seeing what it's like to walk down the street and smile at people as I usually do and then not care. Try saying, okay, that's as far as that goes. That's my little light I put on you, my smile. Armand Amour here with The Positive Mind with Lisa. And, you know, we happen to be here during a very interesting time, talk about significance. Because when you get depressed, you're kind of, everything begins to feel really hard. What a depressed person doesn't matter, they don't count. They take everything out of the picture before anything ever happens. Everything feels hard. After a while of living like this, they forget about themselves. They did what they need to do to get dressed appropriately for work, for bed, for getting out of the house, to get groceries and so on. It's pseudo-functional. But being functional and taking care of oneself are completely different things. When you're depressed, a lot of your thoughts tell you that you are so wrong in so many ways. If there's no way to make up for all your wrongness, then you may as well at least get out of your way. Don't make any more fuss than you already are by existing and breathing air. And then what happens to a depressed person is they become silent. They don't want to talk anymore. They don't want to raise their voice. You get into a bad mental habit of thinking like this for weeks, months, even years. Finally, if you're fortunate to find help in one form or another, like you're listening to WBAI and The Positive Mind, you start to come out of the fog. As you come out of the fog, you discover a great deal about yourself that has changed since you've been depressed. For example, you forget how to make yourself important to other people. So now this is a very interesting thing. Coming out of a depression, you come out kind of clean. It's a little bit like being a baby. It's like being fresh. And there's an opportunity to discover yourself in a different way, rather than going back to the old way of being. And there's some advantage to it. But while we're here, let's take a look at something, okay? While we're here to tell you about a thing we would like you to do. This is WBAI, WBAI Radio 99.5. If you've been listening to our program now once or in the future, you'll find that we give a lot of education. We teach a lot. We bring you lots of information about, well, here we do psychological health. Other programs do nutrition, meditation, the news like you can't hear it anywhere else, and fabulous music. And it's just that kind of a station. It's not perfect 24/7. But there's something to pick and choose from on WBAI all the time, and you get used to it. So how many of you both been long-term listeners?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, well, what kind of program would you pick? Would you leave it on all the time, or were there certain things you would
I tune in for programs that I like. I listen to Democracy Now, and I always listen to the Positive Mind.
Now you can't listen anymore.
I can't.
Because you're here?
Because I'm here.
Right. Yeah. Jonna, what about you? What do you see with the program?
I enjoy a lot of the music programs, Armand, during the early hours of the week or even on the weekends. I find that the music that they play and it's commercial free is so great, like on Friday and Saturday nights. You could just leave it on all night and not be bothered by commercials. And it's excellent programming. The music on the weekend is excellent. And those are my favorite shows.
So what can people do? So what's this idea?
Please consider becoming a WBAI buddy, which means that you would sign up to make a recurring donation using a credit card or electric funds transferred from your bank account. It's very safe and secure. You pick the amount you'd like to give every month. And there are certain perks to becoming a member, such as discounts at museums, free tickets to concerts and shows. You also get gifts from BAI, and also that the fund drives are less time. So if you become a BAI buddy by giving, say, $10 a month, which is 33 cents a day, and if enough people did that, then we won't have fund drives, or we won't have as many, which is great. And you'll belong to this station. You'd be a BAI buddy member. And, you know, and when and if there are fund drives, you've already taken care of your end of it. And, you know, you feel like, you're supporting commercial-free, you know, listener-sponsored radio, which is very important. The station is very, very informative. Like Armand said, it's the educational, you know, school on the airwaves, and we're trying something new. So we're asking our listeners to give this a shot. You can give $10 a month or $25 a month. It also makes you eligible to vote for at WBAI. So please consider this. The number you would call to do this is 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Please consider doing this and, you know, helping out WBAI, trying something new. You know, you pick how much you want to give, even as $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever you can give. I think this would help the station enormously.
It's a new idea for the station. I didn't like the use of the word buddy because it just seemed a little too male for me. But I did see monthly donor. I did like that a lot, an MD. And I thought everybody should get the name MD. And then, therefore, when you send a mail from the AI, it would be addressed to you, MD. And your postman would look at it, or postperson would look at it and say, oh, a doctor. But you are the doctor. You're a doctor of society by donating to WBAI. And this is a time, my friends, when you could make a difference by doing a monthly commitment. And the monthly commitment is a nice thing. You know, you might do it with NPR and a couple of other places that you know get their support mainly from you. Now, they may get additional support. NPR does, I know for sure. And they get some corporate money. We don't. Maybe because we're so iconoclastic and so negative in so many ways about most corporations. Maybe that's why. I mean, why would they want to give us money? What are they going to do? U.S. Steel is going to say here, Con Ed is going to say here, we'll give you money, guys. Go trash us a little more. No, they're not going to do that. The government barely gives us anything. We get some funds that are available to us, but they've cut a lot of those out a little at a time. George Bush, I think, wanted to completely eliminate public funding. for the radio. So that leaves us with you. And you're our support. So instead of us waiting for the, I'll never forget the Shinnecock Indians. I was up in northern Long Island once, and they're the Pusputucks and the Shinnecocks. The Shinnecocks are the people who were very wealthy Indians because they had land that they sold to farmers. They're the South Fork. The Pusputucks were on the North Shore, and they had mixed race with a lot of slaves that would come up from the South, and they were very poor. They weren't very industrious, and they had the worst land. So when I went to the Pusputuck Reservation, the guy came over and said, "Are you the government man?" I said, "What government man?" He says, "We've been waiting for blankets. The winter is coming." And I said, "Blankets from the government?" They said, "Yes, they've been promising them to us for over 15 years, and each year we need them." Well, I went on my own personal fund drive to try to gather enough money to at least get some blankets in there. But, you know, sometimes you just don't know where the blanket's going to come from. We need you to give this blanket, to make this your own blanket payment. 212-209-2950. There are people who are actually sitting there right now. 212-209-2950. Ready to get this started. Now, I want to kick this off. I'm going to make the call. Lisa's going to make the call. We're all going to become part of this and give our credit cards on the phone right now, right? And make it, but we can't do give the credit cards on the air, because if we do, then everybody would be buying things in my name. You'd be all getting new iPhones or something, and I wouldn't. Not that big a benefactor. 212-209-2950. If you would please go to your phones and make a call. This is it. This is the time. We're going to try to get you to do this. We got about 2 minutes. Going to take a break. We're going to play a little music. We're going to come back a little more programming. Maybe take your calls today, but 212-209-2950. Please be a part of this buddy system. It's a thing. BAI is trying it. It works for a couple of other stations. Who else does this? We know NPR does it. Who else does it? Do you know? A couple of other people have done this, and it's worked, and it means a stipend. It means you're tithing. You know, you're given a piece of what you got, and you're making a commitment to every month, and you'd be amazed at how little it affects you.
I have done it, and I do it, and I feel it's amazing to see the $10 come out. It's just $10. It doesn't make me feel any stress at all to see just $10 coming out. But I always think when I see that $10, well, that's $120 a year. That's what I'm giving to something that I really support. And I want to do that. And so it just feels good to have it in place and to know that as a part of my regular routine and my monthly bills, something is happening that's supporting something I really believe in.
That's really nice, you know, Lisa, because when I get my credit card bills and I see the other places where I give this to, it's like one of the gems to know that I've done that. You know, I may see the Walgreen bill or the Amazon bill, and that comes up for the other stuff that I've ordered, but then there it is, this precious little thing that I've done to support, where I feel grateful that I have anything called a credit card. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. We are going to take a short break, Michael, and then when we come back, a little music about this being invisible, insignificant, and then we will continue with our programming. We'll be right back.
If someone stood up in a crowd and raised his voice up way out loud and waved his arm and shook his leg, you'd notice him. If someone in the movie show yelled, "Fire in the second row, this whole place is a powder keg," you'd notice him. And even without clucking like a hen, everyone gets noticed now and then. A unless, of course, that personage should be invisible, inconsequential. Me. Cellophane, Mr. Cellophane, should I bend my name, Mr. Cellophane, 'cause you can look right through me, walk right by me, and never know. You can look right through me, walk right by me, and never know. Suppose you was a little cat residing in a person's flat who fed you fish and scratched your ears. You'd notice 'em. Suppose you was a woman wed, been sleeping in a double bed beside one man for 7 years. You'd notice him. A human being's made of more than air. With all that bulk, you're bound to see him there. Unless that human being next to you is unimpressive, undistinguished, you know who. Should I bend my name, Mr. Cellophane, 'cause you can look right through me, walk right by me, and never know I'm there. I tell you, cellophane, Mr. Cellophane, should I bend my name, Mr. Cellophane, 'cause you can look right through me, walk right by me, and never taking up too much of your time.
All right, there we was, and a lot took place during that beautiful moment. So while you were all listening to music, you know what I did? I went to the phone and called 212-209-2950, and I made a donation. And you're about to do that too, right, Lisa? All right, Lisa, what are you going to get on now?
Yes, I am. I'll do it I'll make the next call.
Okay, well, do it. Lisa's making the call. I'll hold it down so they don't hear you, your phone. Come on, people, join me. 212-209-2950. So I gave an amount of money, a little more than what we're asking for, but $10 a month, a beautiful thing. 212-209-2950, and we're coming right back to you. 212-209-2950. Make your calls. It's a good time. It's an excellent time. So now Lisa's going to call in right now to make her donation. So the phone should be ringing down there at WBAI. started. And pretty soon some of the other staff members here at the DeMille Center are going to be making those phone calls. Go ahead, do it. I'll do it. Okay, good. Good. All right, Lisa.
I did it.
You did it too,
yep,
right?
I'm a buddy.
You're a buddy. I'm a buddy, right? And I know that John is going to become a buddy. So, 212-209-2950. Let's talk about exhibitionism. How about liking to be seen naked by other people? Let's not just say it's genitalia. Let's say it's just I want people to look at me and I want people to admire me. And let's say that exhibitionism goes beyond the sexual perversion to some kind of an impulse need for significance. So there you got it. You know, you want to look sharp. So is somebody who dresses up to the nines, where do you think the expression came from? The nines, we're going to have to look that one up. I guess they're going to come, it's dressed to the nines, Lisa. Someone who dresses up to the nines, do you think that when they walk down and they get admired, this is a form of exhibitionism? Of course it is. The fact that they don't flash doesn't make it less exhibitionistic. I know people who like to be naked in public. I know people who have desires to be seen in public nakedly, to be shocked by other people, and to turn other people on. So one wonders, when you see what is dressed to the nine, do we know? One wonders when you see people who are dancers, you know, if there's not this exhibitionist quality to it. And then when we see people who are nude dancers, and I've known quite a few who have come through here who are dancers in clubs who talk about how they like the work of dancing naked because they like the idea of turning somebody on. And that it's a great pleasure to do it. Not that it's, you know, they're just victims and they're exploiting and so on and so forth. How about exhibitionism? How about what kind of a thing? What does that have to do with trying to make yourself count? Well, one of the things they say about it is that, number one, believe it or not, exhibitionism is not a female quality. It's a male quality. It seems to go along with high levels of testosterone. So it seems that the person who goes out there to show their bodies is kind of a male. If it's a female, it's kind of a male-female. It's like a female with a lot more testosterone than average. The chemistry, the chemical makeup of it. It's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's like what they prefer. They prefer to be seen. They prefer to be, to have what's called an indecent exposure. But there's something about it that's very wonderful and freeing, and it seems like the meaning of life. So what happens if that person joins a nunnery? You know, or they become a Muslim, and they're wearing, and they're all covered up. What's it like being in a religion where every piece of your body is hidden, even your voice, and you are taught that insignificance is the highest level of good? I think that's almost true, isn't it? Without putting down any religions, isn't that kind of a belief that if you're under your garb, and your eyes are the only thing that show, and every other part of your body is hidden because you don't want to stimulate a man, which is the idea behind it. Therefore, whoever you are underneath there, you're not to be attended to. You think?
I wonder if you can't use your physical self to be significant, that there are other ways that it directs that energy into another way of feeling significant.
Like you becoming a good cook, right? Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's allowed. Maya Landis and Hayes group individuals with these behavior into four distinct personalities. They call them type A, the impulsive personality. Individuals in this group are obsessed, they're tensed, they're sexually confused, and they respond in engaging in exhibitionistic behaviors out of impulse, and they say, but it comes from distress. So when you're distressed, that's when you get the impulse to rip off your clothing. Type B, which is the inadequate personality, this group are obsessed, shy, introverted, they lack social skills, and they respond by engaging in this behavior out of anger. See, it's in like an aggressive way. I will be naked in front of you. Now, I've seen exhibitionists who seem very angry. I'm showing you this. I'm going to go around topless because I have a right to, because I want to prove it's just, but there's an anger behind all of it. You know, there was a hotel in New York that was dedicated to exhibitionism. And I'm not going to say the name of it, but you can look it up on the internet. And there is a hotel that was an exhibitionist hotel where people were encouraged to go and be more than naked. Type C is the unaware personality. This is the individuals in this group engage in exhibitionism, unaware of their actions because they suffer from some kind of mental limitation. Either from, so these are people who are exhibitionistic, from either have mental retardation, organic brain disorder, or the same group, the unaware personality type C, become exhibitionistic when they are intoxicated from consuming excessive amounts of alcohol. So you get wild when you drink a lot. See? Type D, the assaultive personality. Individuals in this group develop great amounts of anger and hostility that have built up over time, and they tend to assault the victims while exposing themselves. These individuals experience little or no guilt, and they get sexually aroused from the victim's reaction. This would, I'm sure, have to do with the raincoat guy, you know, and the guy who exposes himself to helpless people. Even though mostly men engage in the behavior, female exhibitionists are not uncommon if they have high testosterone levels, which is very interesting. And they may take up, this says, they may take up employment in strip clubs or live camera via the internet where they could expose themselves. So what I want you to understand is that there is something to this. Exposing yourself because you want to be loved, admired, appreciated, and you want to be wanted sexually by people watching you. And it usually stems back to kind of trying to be really significant in a way for some parent where that really mattered. I guess usually it's daddy. Who else could it be? Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. Let's talk about agency. Right? This should have been one of our classes today, but it's not, because it's a discussion, because we're talking about being a buddy as well. Oh, we've got to get more time for buddying. Agency. What is agency?
So a sense of agency is a belief that you are in control of what happens and that you have the power to change things, to be an agent of change in your life.
So a sense of agency. Do you have a sense of agency? Do you think you're in control of your life? Do you think you have that power? Now, your sense of agency gets really screwed up at times, and that's where schizophrenia is.
Right. Well, if you're being told by what to do by voices in your head, then the sense of agency you have is to carry out the will of the voices, not your own will. So a healthy sense of agency is being connected to what you know and want, and then taking action in that direction.
So we're saying that a person having a sense of agency. A sense of agency is kind of a normal thing to have. And then we're talking about this concept, which is trying to be significant at the same time. So you have to have your sense of agency to try to utilize your significance. But here's my final question. My final question is it all a sham? Is all of it? What would happen if nobody noticed you? What would happen if nobody cared? What would happen if you walked around and let yourself be invisible? Now, there are people who try to make themselves invisible because they don't want to stimulate anybody. There are people who do that all the time. But for those of you who are always trying with such big effort, let me tell you, I try to practice this. It's like I believe that silence is a good practice. I think every now and then a person should take a day and never say a word. Carry a pad with you. Make up an excuse. You could say, I got a bad sore throat, or I'm being silent today. And spend a day in absolute silence. I think you learn a tremendous amount. I think you should spend a day in slow motion to see what it's like to move in slow motion everywhere you can. Cut the speed of everything you do by about a third, two-thirds, so that even when you speak slowly, carefully. See what I mean? All right, so this is it. So this is our exploration today. Significance, non-significance. I would like to hear your response to that. The worst thing in the world is being plagued by a mind, by your own mind, that says to you, everything you're doing is significant. Everything in your relationship is significant. All your battles are significant. Your fights are significant. It's all so important. Gee, the arguments that people get into. You bought the wrong toothpaste on purpose. I'm too old for that kind of a relationship. I just can't do it. I just can't. I mean, no. I'm like those guys who want to quit. You know, I just said no. If you're going to have a discussion about this is what it's going to be about. If this is going to be really important, you can't have me in this discussion. But if anybody out there wants to join me in a discussion that's more real, or one where we don't speak at all, I'm perfectly amenable. You know? Hey, this is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone and Gianna Valerio. We will be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m.